Nation with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast number 115. I'm Adam and with me is Mr. Ben Shoveler.
No.
What?
No, I'm Ben Bot or whatever.
Oh, yes.
That was very funny, Jim. That was very funny. I did laugh.
Yeah, I thought it was worth getting you on, obviously, to, well, at least give some sort of feedback to Jim's feedback. Right, you're on now. Goodbye.
That's all you're getting. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Hi.
Right then. How's it been, Ben, before we crack on with podcasting type stuff?
Well, generally quite good. Today's been a bit annoying.
Has it?
Yeah, I've had a day off, and I spent my whole day sitting in Quick Fit.
I thought you were going to say quicksand for a minute then.
That would have been more enjoyable. And probably more productive.
Yeah,
but they're rubbish. Seriously. I mean, I had a little fault with my aircon. I got it filled up on Saturday and it all gone off again and it was all hot again by Sunday afternoon. So I took it back in there today, my first day off since then.
Mm.
And they said, oh, we'll have to perform a diagnostics test on it. And they'll have to go to another branch, which is about 6 miles away. And this is after waiting like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So I drove over to this other branch, sat there again for, you walk in, they say, oh, be about 10 minutes. I sat there again for about an hour. I eventually got around to looking at it, and I went out to have a watch to see what they were doing, because I was quite interested.
Yeah.
And I walked out, I sparked up a fag, and by the time I'd finished my fag, the bloke had done this so-called diagnostics test on my air conditioning system, which, as far as I could see, consisted of him sitting in my car for a bit and revving the engine, and then looking in the bonnet. Which, to be honest, I think they could have probably done at the first one. You know, they are pretty clever, these mechanic types.
Apparently so.
And this diagnostics test that lasted no more than 3 minutes cost me £35. And then they told me that, oh, well, we think we found the problem and it's going to cost £300 to fix. You think you found it or you have found it? I mean, I'm not being funny, but if they're going to charge £30 for a 3 minute diagnostic test, I think we're all in the wrong business.
Yes, I did see something about QuickFit on BBC Watchdog a few months ago, so maybe it's that type of QuickFit. However, just to balance things up a bit, when we had to use QuickFit when we were in Blackpool and they replaced one of the burnt-out coils, it was fine. It was quite, well, £90, but I know obviously it just depends maybe which mechanics and which QuickFit it is.
I mean, to be fair, the manager of the first one I went to was absolutely brilliant. You know, he was a lovely chap. Good customer service.
Yes.
And he gave me my money back this afternoon as well, because the aircon obviously didn't work.
Ah.
Which was obviously very good of him.
Yes.
But, you know, the fact that I had to drive over to another branch for them to look under the bonnet,
yeah,
charge me £35 for fighting my 3 minutes' work, and then still have no aircon at the end of the day, and then saying this has cost £300, and it's probably just a hose that's fallen off or something, but they do whatever to find it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not very Doctor Who, and you know, I haven't been on for weeks and weeks and
no,
weeks.
No, indeed. No, it hasn't. And we've really missed you. I mean,
well, I can imagine the comedy elements have gone down quite a lot.
Obviously, the others have missed you, because none of them could be bothered to be on this evening, even though Reese said he'd look out for me on Skype, and Kirby, well, he'd probably forgive him. He's probably still at work, and he's sort of on his holiday week, but he did want to be here, but he couldn't be here because of time constraints. Because normally, listeners, we record this show on a Monday morning at 11 a.m, as I've probably illustrated several times, because a clock normally chimes that sort of chiming, but today me and Ben are doing this at 8:30 in the evening.
That's very strange, doing it firstly on a Wednesday,
yeah,
not a Monday.
Yes.
And also doing it at, let's say, 8:30 in the evening rather than 11 o'clock. Now, normally, I was allowed to do this because the wife was out on Monday mornings and then went off to work, as regular listeners to the podcast will know.
Yes.
But this evening, Wednesday night, is her shopping night, so she's gone shopping. So, you know, she's currently walking around Sainsbury's. Other supermarkets are available, but I wouldn't go there.
No.
I've heard the workforce is a little bit dodgy. Yeah, so that's why I'm allowed to do it until she comes back.
To do it. It's quite funny.
I have the time to do it without causing more arguments, which, to be honest.
Well,
so.
I'm hoping that somebody does turn up this evening. I'm just see if I can get, because I'm using my new Mac. Well, newish now. I've had it for a while now.
Well, that's the first time we've used this one, so I must be sounding fantastic tonight.
Well, yeah. I sound a bit like you're talking in the toilet and slightly like a Cyberman, but that's fairly topical, so I don't think I'm going to complain too much about it.
I need to point out to everybody listening that if they miss me, if they miss my dulcet tones, then all you need to do is go into any Ladbrokes betting shop in England. Obviously, if you're not in England, that's a bit hard. Or Scotland or Wales, mm-hmm. or Ireland, to be fair. So we'll change that to Great Britain. All you need to do is go into any Ladbrokes, and within about 15 minutes, you'll hear me on one of the adverts that I'm making fantastically for the company at the moment.
Good plug. Right then.
And don't forget, on Saturday, we're best price on England to win the European Championship.
Oh, excellent.
I've
got some audio feedback.
Okay. Well, good evening to the various members of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Adam, Alicia, Isabella, Deb, Star, Magic, the wonderful Clock, who is of course the utmost star performer and one who should never ever be banished into the wilderness of his studio to whatever you call it. Hello of course to Ben. You know what, Ben, it's not the same not hearing you doing the charts, because there's that palpable moment of tension when you come along and say, and at number 23 is up 4 for the of course Jim the Fish, excellent. I think he's so inventive. Did you actually find out, is he related to Techman James or not? It will be interesting, Penis Patrol. Robert, I must say, great news to hear how well you are again. You know, just seen your Facebook status got over about 15 minutes ago from having a 53rd armful siphoned out of me. So it's good for you. Rhys, stop slacking. You've got nothing to do. What's happened to the Who's the Man podcast? You know, it's blooming lazy Australians, I don't know. Kirby, yep. Keep the good work. I think it was a good two hands of the day. I mean, Love and Monster, I do remember it as being one of the most whimsical and delightfully off the wall, or should that be off the floor, episodes you ever come across. Being a Birmingham fan, of course, what you may not know is Mr. Blue Sky, despite being hijacked by some fake team of blue who won some minor little competition of the day. It's in fact what Birmingham City do come out to just prior to they play the Tampa. So Mr. Blue Sky, of course, being a Brummie band, is so appropriate for us. I really do like that. I think we're all just waiting now to see what date the new series will come out. There, new series will come out. Not season, because the new season starts in early August when the new football season starts. And, of course, the thing is set to the new rugby season starts. We're into the cricket season now as well. So sporting occasions are commonplace. We've got the big Premiership final. Come on, you Quins, beat those Tigers. But apparently it's going to be either end of August or early September. I mean, they have sported slightly by telling us when Rory and Amy are going to go. And if not everybody survives, well, are they going to kill Rory off yet again? Are they going to break Adam's heart by killing off Amy, of course? Break his heart being a relative term. I'm talking about Adam J. Purcell, of course, and Adam Pearson. I'm sure the delightful, lovely Debs is the only one for him, and he'll get slapped if he dares saying otherwise. I can still hear recoil of the slap. And by the way, did you do the hoovering? Can I ask, please, be more careful in future? I was actually giving a cross trainer a good thrashing while I was listening to the lunchtime, and I nearly fell off the damn thing because I was laughing so much. I think everyone in the gym thought I'd gone bonkers and wasn't staring at me in sheer disbelief. But, yeah, keep up the good work, lads. Adam, congratulations on Southampton getting the Premiership. Unfortunately, Blackpool were just too good for us. And for Ben, yes, I can just about hear the faint noise of the beep beep as a big red bus reverses the garage, waiting to have its roof welded back on again. Anyway, folks, keep up the good work. Look forward to another excellent episode next week. And Andy Nunney signing off. Bye for now.
Thank you, Andy Nunney.
Thank you, Andy.
You know, I got some stick off him on the internet, on Facebook, in fact, last week. But I've forgotten what he was giving me stick about. So, Obviously, it didn't mean that much to me, but thanks, Andy. Brilliant. Always nice to hear Andy. He doesn't write in that often or speak in that often, but when he does.
I've got a couple of replies to him.
Yes?
Jim the Fish isn't related to Techum and James, he's related to Nemo, out of Finding Nemo.
Right, okay.
Rhys can't be bothered anymore because apparently he's auditioning for Neighbours and Home and Away.
Yeah. Oh, he told you that one. He didn't tell me that one. Probably he was too.
I'm an Australian lovey. I must get on the soap operas.
Obviously.
Oh, I love the acting.
Too ashamed to mention that one to me. But never mind.
Maybe he's going to be try and be the next Dame Edna Riveridge.
Yes, maybe so. I think that would fit him, or suit him, indeed. Not fit him.
I think it would.
I could see him in the wig and the glasses.
I think he'd do a grand job.
Yeah.
And, I can't remember. There was something else, but
there was something else, actually. But yes, he was saying about Amy and Adam Purcell. I'm glad he did correct himself. It was actually talking about Adam Purcell from the Staggering Stories podcast, not me. Yes, Debbie is, of course, the only woman for me. And we've just celebrated our 19th wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We're nearly at 4. We will be, in about a month or so, if we make it.
Yes, and next year, of course, she qualifies for her medal.
Rachel?
No. Yeah, maybe so.
I was going to say, no, mate, I need the medal.
Do you? No, I was talking about Deb with qualifiers for a medal next year.
Oh, yes, well, she clearly does. Need some sort of help. I'm just sticking with you for that lot.
Right, let's move on. Ian Kirk has sent in an audio message, unusually, and it goes something like this.
Unemployment at the records of...
Hello, 20 Megawatt Podcast. Hello, Ian Kirk. Fear Her by Matthew Graham. What a sorry show. Sorry show, show sorry. But we're giving this one a miss. Army of Ghosts and Doomsday by Russell T. Davies. This is an end of year episode, so lots of returning characters. Jackie Tyler, Pete Tyler, Nikki, the Daleks, the Cybermen. We also see Freema Agyeman for the first time. She will later return as a cousin of this character.
Indeed.
At the beginning, Rose is eating chips. Perhaps RTD has an agenda to stop US fans calling them French fries.
True right.
Torchwood London under Ron Hartman is wiped out, so it can be replaced in a spin-off series by Torchwood Cardiff under Captain Jack. The Powell Estate is in Peckham, London SE15. This is also where the BBC comedy Only Fools and Horses was set. Leeds is elected and endorsed as an MP. There are 5 constituents in Leeds. I think this will be Leeds Central, as there are a lot of students there. I saw Men in Black 3 on Friday.
Ooh,
the plot is a bit like the Doctor Who episode Turn Left. Agent K was killed in the 1960s, so a different timeline occurs where Earth is invaded. Who is more dangerous, Ben with a knife or Reese with a spoon? Bye for now.
What's he mean?
What? Reese with a spoon.
Oh, God, why did I fall for that one?
I really don't know.
And it's very also very unfortunate somebody decided to send some message on Facebook and it happened to notify me in the middle of that particular audio. But once again, thank you very much, Ian. But it gets cleverer and cleverer as time goes on. And sometimes a bit too clever for me.
Clearly.
Yes. Reese with a spoon. Ben with a knife. Well, how's that work then? Ben with a knife bit?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not any sort of like kniferist person.
No, you're not.
I don't go around stabbing people up. That's not my bag.
Not yet, anyway.
I prefer lethal injection.
Well, even the person who won the special award on the BAFTAs.
Oh, I pay no attention to award shows.
I do not.
Especially when Stephen Moffat wins.
He got a hug off Benedict Cap and the other one, Matt Smith. I can say Matt Smith, not Benedict.
The other one. The one who plays that character.
Yeah, him.
What's his name?
I should perhaps have said the other way around, Matt Smith and the other one, because Benedict, him. Anyway, Cabbage Patch, isn't it?
Benedict Cabbage Patch.
Yeah. Got some more audio feedback. This is from somebody called Jim the Fish.
Oh, we know Jim the Fish.
It goes like this. Brace yourself, by the way. Rubber shoes and all that.
Okay.
Bated breath.
Something like that.
Here it comes.
Could you tell me the votes of the Isle of Wight jury, please? Only joking. This is the Galactic Exchange. You have a message. But first, a public service announcement. We had a visit from the Shadow Proclamation Health and Safety Division. As a result, we can no longer zap you. So here is your zap free message.
Jim the Fish calling the 20 Megabyte Podcast. It was exciting, last week, to watch the new Doctor Who adventure, so I thought,
what are you doing?
I'm recording my review of that new Doctor Who mini-episode.
Can I review it as well?
As long as you are, good as gold.
Okay. Do I press this?
Not that button.
Oops.
I am Cyber Ben. What would you like me to evaluate today?
Nothing at all. I'm taking you back for a refund.
Please. Give me one more chance. I will review it properly this time.
One last chance. Inputting the episode, now.
I have completed my in-depth analysis.
And?
This was a special, one-off, standalone episode of Doctor Who, shown exclusively on CBBC and the Galactic Network.
And?
It was written by three talented pupils from Ashdene Primary School in Willslow.
And?
It was all right.
That's it. I'm packing you up and taking you back today.
Please, don't take me off the audio feedback.
Well, that's our reviews done, so just time to ask, what did you 20 megabiters make of that new Doctor Who mini-episode, Good as Gold? This is Jim the Fish, Natasha, and Cyber Ben, signing out.
Bye.
Delete Moffat.
Your message has ended. Those Shadow Proclamation health and safety officials are real spoil sports. Have a nice day.
Right, what do we make of the mini-episode? Did you see the mini-episode?
Which mini-episode?
It was the one that the school kids had written, the new one.
No, thankfully I missed that.
It was a bit better, maybe only mildly better than last year's effort, I think.
Well, it would have been a lot better than anything Stephen Moffat could write.
Yeah, I didn't think of that particular part of it. But yes, it was what it was. It was a mini-episode written by some kids. Nice to see Matt Smith and Karen Gillan on the screen again. Can't think of anything else to say about it, really.
Well, I shall have a look out for that on Tinternet.
Yes, it is on there. It's on YouTube, I think.
I didn't realise that was even on there.
I'll tell you where it definitely is. It's on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook page because somebody posted it on there and that's where I watched it. So it might be a good idea.
That's always handy.
It is handy, indeed. Right, I'm on the wrong blooming thing here. I'm on the wrong email account. Hang on. Oh, this is really going really badly. Typical 20 Megabyte podcast. Right. I think I've got some more audio feedback, if I can find it. Here we go. This is from our Isle of Wight listener, Mr. Roy Spearman. Let's hope this plays, and I've turned it down because Deb is a little bit upset about it being too loud.
It's all right, no one heard that.
So if you can't hear it, let me know.
Hi guys, it's Roy, your Isle of Wight correspondent here. So, Kirby's a bit of a fan of a bit of the old Gilbert and Sullivan, is he? Right, we'll try this on for size. In a tower block sat on the banks of the Thames, we see London and Torchwood, yes, Torchwood. They are playing with opening a rift to the void. Oh, Torchwood, oh, Torchwood, oh, Torchwood. With a voyage below, Cybermen floors above, you just know it's gonna go wrong with roofs of blood. And they've gone meet the TARDIS with Rose inside. Oh, Torchwood, dear Torchwood, oh, Torchwood. In a fairly brief role, we see a Jim Freeman working for Torchwood, dear Torchwood, yes, Torchwood. They do like to reuse the double headset, last seen in The Rise of the Cybermen. With ghosts in the streets and Babs Windsor to boot, in this season finale, Rose, she gets the boot. But that all comes to fruition in part two, we know. Call Doomsday, yes, Doomsday, Bad Wolf Bay. I'll leave you all now with this final notion to consider think on, or ponder. Throughout the story, we hear only of one. Torchwood London, Doom London, dear London. So as all this goes on and the battle begins, between foil-clad guys and those murderous wheelie bins, I have just to wonder, as Jackie's not seen. From Cardiff, Welsh Cardiff, a hole in Cardiff? That's it, I've now murdered Gilbert and Sullivan. Hope you guys are well. Catch you in the remix.
Thank you, Roy. Did you hear that, Ben?
I did, and I've got to say, I'm stuck in some sort of surreal, don't know what is going on world.
I think there's some sort of competition going on between Mr. Spearman and Mr. Fish.
Right. I'm still massively confused.
Well, apparently Kirby on the last episode let it slip that he's a bit of a fan of Gilbert and Sullivan.
All right.
Somehow I think after listening to that, his fanhood might have diminished somewhat. But thank you, Roy, for sending in that lovely little
ditty. I thought it was incredibly good.
Yeah, it was all right, wasn't it?
I always liked it.
Well, certainly slightly better than I can do. Well, mind you, he did write the words himself, I take it.
Yes, I think you probably did. They were very good.
Well, not that. It was very, very good. Thanks, everybody, for your feedback this week. I'm just going to double-check that I haven't missed anybody, because I'm getting a bit fed up with my phone playing up. Nope, that was the last one. Right, yes. Right, I was going to briefly go over the episode we have skipped, because obviously we're going to just recap on what we've already reviewed. That's Fear Her a few months ago. Not going to review it again, pointless really, but I did watch it, and anything that's stuck in my mind, it actually is quite a good episode really, to be honest with you. It's a bit cheesy in some places, but on the whole it's all right. Yeah, it's not, certainly not the worst Doctor Who I've ever seen. It's quite enjoyable, goes on a fairly good pace. There's some good little comedy moments in it. But what I spotted was when they were outside walking along the street having a conversation, you could clearly see their breath in the air, and it's supposed to be in June. You'd never get that in June. I think they should have CGI'd their breath away.
Have you turned into Kirby?
Well, I've got to do that somewhere on the line, you know.
You're getting pernickety, mate.
No, it just sort of stood out. I think maybe because I'm watching on my high definition Mac screen, and even though it did stand out quite strong.
I've never noticed that. That's a really good spot, but I've never noticed it.
Just looked really weird because I'm watching it now around about the time it's set. Well, obviously we're in May,
yeah.
But that would have been set probably in July mainly, which is probably nearer the middle of the summer than we are now. And I've never experienced walking around in the middle of the day, in the middle of the summer, and seeing my breath evaporate. But it was quite prominent on those. But obviously when Doctor Who, that episode of Doctor Who was shown, it probably would have been around the same time of the year, actually, wouldn't it?
It would have been, what, it used to run
March to June.
Yeah, so it would have been, May, June time, wouldn't it?
But it might have just been when it originally went out, nobody really, or not enough people, had high-definition TVs to spot little details like that, maybe.
Or cared, maybe.
That as well. That's all I'm going to say about Fear. Huh?
Good episode, though. I did like that one.
Yeah, apart from the fact that Kirby said that he didn't want to review it again, when I went and checked the archives, he wasn't on that episode. So he completely got out of it somewhere along the line, and he's obviously got out of this episode as well. I know he wanted to look at the episodes we're going to talk about today, which is Rise of the Cybermen, is it, and Doomsday, I think they're called. Yes. Now, did you get a chance to watch them?
No, but to be honest with you, I've seen them so many times over the last couple of years. I was thinking when he said which one we were doing, I thought, do I need to watch it? And I honestly thought, no, I don't. I saw them on Gold a little while ago.
Yeah,
literally weeks ago, so I think I'm probably up to speed enough to be able to talk about them with the usual amount of rubbish that I come out with.
Well, I say I haven't actually watched it for a few years.
Have you not?
No, and I think I've found that with quite a lot of these episodes that I've not watched them that often. And that way, I'm getting quite a lot of enjoyment out of these, which obviously this is one of the classics of new Doctor Who. And that shone from this. So it starts off with little bits of Rose talking about her life before being with the Doctor, and then her life with the Doctor and how much she loves it. And then she says, this is how I died, basically. So, and we see a little clip of Rose and the Doctor on some planet surface watching what looked like dinosaurs, maybe, or creatures that were like dinosaurs from an adventure we haven't seen, which Kirby finds quite exciting, those little sort of clips and mentions of unseen adventures with Rose and the Doctor. That was sort of, when we watched it, we thought, hang on, Rose dead, how are they going to do that? Are they really going to kill her off? Obviously, no, they weren't really in the back of your mind, and it's a bit Stephen Moffat-y, because he lied, because she didn't die, really, especially as she came back later on. And of course, we get that scene when the Doctor and Rose arrive back at Jackie's house, and Jackie gives the Doctor a kiss and a cuddle, and he sort of stands there with his hands all straight and then wipes his mouth. I thought it was quite funny.
Like a child.
Yes. So all things start off quite normal. The Doctor's like Rose is showing off some little trinket that they acquired somewhere. And then these ghosts, alleged ghosts, start appearing. One of her granddad. At this point, we discover Jackie's maiden name. Prentice, I think it was. And also in this episode, we've been talking about all the way through this series, when does the Doctor first say Allons-y? And it's the end of episode one, I think, he says it. And then he says, I think I might start saying that. And he did. So that was a bit... Did I hear a bird singing then?
I've got the windows open, so quite possibly.
Very summary. So obviously there's these strange ghostly figures. Again, at the time when I watched it, it didn't twig that they might be Cybermen. I knew Cybermen were in the story, but it didn't twig that they might be Cybermen themselves. And then we see the team of Torchwood with what was her name? Tracy Ann Oberman's character.
Yes.
Can't remember her name. Darn.
No.
And also Free Magiman.
Of course, Freema.
In the background, playing. Allegedly her cousin. And of course then the Doctor starts skipping through all the channels, and there's like ghost forecasts instead of weather forecasts. Quite funny. And then they have a clip of a Trisha episode. Obviously Trisha is no longer on television. They perhaps should have used Jeremy Carr. I was pretty sure Jeremy Carr was on TV in those days. Good bits of comedy. And the funniest bit, of course, was not really the funniest bit, the standout bit of these little clips was Barbara Windsor doing the Peggy and the Vic for EastEnders.
Yes.
About the Den Watts bit. Because a few people on our show said, I've never watched EastEnders, don't know what it's all about. And there we have Barbara Windsor, a quite iconic actress in Britain, appearing on Doctor Who. I'd forgotten she'd ever been on it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those little cameo things you just do forget about, isn't it?
So
quick.
I wonder how many other carry-on actors have been in Doctor Who. Oh, yes, there was the meddling monk. That was a carry-on actor, wasn't it? I can't remember his name again. I'm really bad on names, it's really bad.
Sorry, if you haven't got a name badge on, I won't have a clue.
I should really know what his name. I will remember it after I've stopped recording. And we have the doctor bloke who's down in the bowels of Torchwood looking after that great big spear. Now, he was in something else just before he was in Doctor Who. And I can't remember what it was. He was in another series, this actor. I wonder if it was EastEnders.
I can't remember. No. I'll be a bit useless tonight.
It's all right, I'll let you off on this occasion. The sphere itself, which obviously doesn't exist, according to all tests that Torchwood have done on it, is the only thing that looks a bit naff in relation to CGI. It doesn't quite look real, but then I suppose it's not supposed to be real, is it?
No.
No, so maybe they get away with it. That's how they got away with it. They probably thought, that doesn't quite look real, so what we're going to do is we're going to say it's not actually real so we can get away with it.
I love your theory on
that. I'm trying to help Russell T Davies out with this one. Then we have a bit of flirting with Freema Agyeman's character, which was, I can't remember her name. Adeoli or something. Well, no, that's Nipples, isn't it? No, that's Arioli.
Yeah.
And the other character, and they decide to go off for a bit of a
hoo-ha
and stumble across some strange polythene areas and decide to wander in. And
yeah, I mean, the amount of times I've been at work and I've seen a large cordoned off polythene area and thought to myself, oh, that looks fine to go into.
Yeah, that's what you do though, isn't it? Polythene area, must enter there. And of course they enter at their peril. The Doctor, meanwhile, is creating some sort of triangulation device in a school, not a school, it was a play field, play area,
yeah.
To try and catch one of the ghosts. And obviously by this stage, Freema's character and her boyfriend have been converted to some sort of cyber person. I don't think that the Doctor sort of captures one of these ghost things, but just long enough to sort of get some sort of
fix on it.
Yeah, fix on where it's coming from, basically, where the signal's coming from. And that's how he ends up in the torture building. They've acquired Jackie somewhere. I think she stowed away, didn't she, on the TARDIS? She came in. Oh, they forgot that she was on it.
I think they forgot she was there, yeah. Didn't they?
And I like the bit where not only is the Doctor sort of found out where the ghost was coming from, but also Torchwood have spotted the Doctor, and they get all excited when they realise it's him.
Yeah.
I think that was really, really good. And especially when he turns up at Torchwood, they sort of surround him like with guns and stuff, and they actually more or less give him a round of applause, because obviously that's when they find out that Jackie's there. And the Doctor, for some reason, decides to pretend that Jackie is Rose.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, Rose stays inside the TARDIS. So, yeah, what else is going on here? Listeners, I am cheating here. I'm fast-forwarding, because I have actually only just watched this episode. But I know if I fast-forward it, I might actually remember certain bits of it. Because it gets a tour of Torchwood. And I still can't remember that blimmin' character's name, played by Tracy Ann Oberman. It's really frustrating. I'll find out later.
Yes.
Somebody should. If Kirby was here, he'd do Wikipedia it for me. Actually, no, he wouldn't. He'd know it off by heart. The Doctor keeps on looking. Where did he get his some 3D specs from? Did he happen to have them in his pocket?
No, View Cinema.
Oh, was it? But anyway, the TARDIS gets carted away with Rose inside it. She sort of opens the door up and peers out, and the Doctor gives her a bit of a look, and she then robs him of the little psychic notepad thing. And then Freema Agyeman's character and her boyfriend tempt another of the colleagues into the polythene area for a bit of conversion. The Doctor is taken down to see the sphere. He doesn't know what it is, but he does look at it with his 3D specs. In fact, he looks at everything with his 3D specs. But
he rather likes them.
And we don't find out why he's using his 3D specs until the very last episode. But never mind. What's her name? Oh, so annoying. Meanwhile, Rose comes out of the TARDIS and puts on a white coat and sort of basically pokes around for a little while.
Pokes around a bit.
And the Doctor sort of is brought to the room where all the what they call it when they have the when they bring the ghosts in, they have a special name for it, but they pulled the handle. Oh God! Well, I should really have written this. This is trouble when you don't actually make notes. But I haven't really got time to make notes. It's awful. And we find out the torture is in fact Canary Wharf. So Alan Sugar will be absolutely delighted, because obviously that means that Alan Sugar owns part of Torchwood,
and I don't mind talking about it.
Yeah,
if that's all right with you.
Torchwood, You're fired.
Freema, you got one series, and then you're out of love.
The Doctor then demonstrates the, you know, the weakness of the rift by sonicking this sheet of glass, which gradually sort of splinters. I thought it was quite a good effect, and it just happens to be right in the middle of the O of Torchwood, and he just pokes it, and it shatters and hits the deck. And then at least they did remember in the script to get someone to clear it up.
True.
So what happens after that? Doctor's trying. Oh, that's right. That brilliant bit where is it called? I think they called it the shift, isn't it? When they were bringing
the ghost ship.
That's right. And she's going to do it anyway. And the Doctor's like, okay then. And gets his suit out. Okay, go on then. After obviously he warned her not to do it, and that because he said yeah, okay, that makes her not to do. To change her mind on it. Another brilliant scene. Don't get that sort of thing from Moffat, you know.
Did you really don't?
Very often.
Ever.
Rose is still poking around, wearing a white coat. It comes up to a bit where later on, where she tries to use it on the bloke down in the bowels of Torchwood.
Yes.
And it doesn't work on him. He just sees it as a blank piece of paper. Epic fail. Yes. The Doctor and the woman whose name eludes me then start poking around some polythene areas with some strange soldiers with little berets with T's on them. Torchwood soldiers, no doubt.
Torchwood police.
Oh, is that what they were?
Probably.
And then a Cyberman cuts through some of this polythene with his hand.
In a scene reminiscent of the old one that we watched with Patrick Troughton.
Tomb of the Cybermen.
That's it, Tomb of the Cybermen. Yeah. Just like that, wasn't it?
It was.
And I also had punching through the little polythene bits, and you just thought, oh, what are these freaky things? And then you realise.
So many Doctor Who fans got very excited at that point. When watching.
Including yourself, probably.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Cybermen turn up. How do they turn up?
Just kind of like on buses.
Yeah, they just suddenly. Oh, that's right, because the shift thing. Oh, yeah. There was a little initial sort of force of Cybermen that turned up, and then when they did the shift, all these ghosts then turned into Cybermen, didn't they?
Yes.
But obviously, when watching the episode, you're thinking, oh, Cybermen, oh, they're the big baddie for this particular story. And, of course, then the sphere thing starts converting into a spaceship of some variety. Lots of CGI Cybermen start coming through the void in the room, which will become prominent later on in the story. And then I see Cybermen turn up. Instead of deleting people, they throttle them, I noticed in this episode. Just as the Daleks come out of the little sphere thing, and it's the what was the name for that group of Daleks that Dalek Khan was the leader of? They had a special name, didn't they?
They did. There was a three of them, wasn't there?
Isn't it awful? Kirby, where are you when we need you? It's an absolute nightmare.
This is a brilliant review so far.
This is what people listen in for. My inadequacies. Still nothing from Reese. Surprise, surprise.
I'm surprised if that's the case. You haven't got more listeners.
So...
Me. I know.
Like I said, so basically the Daleks turn up right at the end of the episode, and then we have the end of that episode, basically, and we have a bit of a recap for episode two. I should click on that one. It's called Doomsday, which is the final episode of the series, which then goes back to Rose standing on a beach talking about the day she died, blah, blah, blah. Just are very pretty, though, those pictures. How did the Doctor get around? Oh, yeah, Rose actually stopped them from exterminating them, didn't she? Because she just told them of the Time War.
Yes. And awareness of such.
Yes. And the Doctor, etc., etc. Right, so what happens next? Right, that's right, because she goes right up sort of eye to eye with Dalek Sek. Obviously, we didn't know at this stage he was called Dalek Sek. And that's obviously illustrates the fact that these Daleks were designed to be the same height as Billy Piper. So she could actually look at them eye to eye.
contact.
I think there's trouble brewing.
There may be trouble ahead.
Yeah.
What trouble is brewing?
No, I can hear voices through my earphones, or headphones, I should say.
Is there a brouhaha?
I'm just seeing if I can hear footsteps as well as voices.
You're going slightly mad, sir.
No, I'm definitely not, I can tell you that. No, I think I'm alright for the moment. Right, what? Sorry?
What footsteps are you hearing?
No, I'll tell you in a minute if I hear them. The character whose name eludes me is trying to sort of smarm up a little bit to the Cybermen. But then we see like shots outside of the war that is beginning between the Cybermen and the Daleks. And of course, they did initially try to set up a pact. And we see some brilliant dialogue between, you know, the Daleks and the Cybermen. And the Daleks basically win the battle of wits with the Cybermen. And basically, they can kill the Cybermen, but the Cybermen find it very difficult killing them. That's what I got from that. They said something on the lines of, yes, the Cybermen are superior in only one way to Daleks.
They're better at dying.
Yes. The Doctor, who was looking after the sphere thing, gets his head sucked out by three plungers. Nasty way to go.
He was in EastEnders.
That's what I said. I said, was he in EastEnders?
Yeah, I was confirming you.
Oh, thank you very much. I can't remember what character he played, but...
He was, someone.
Yeah, thank you.
I haven't watched EastEnders for a long time.
Meanwhile, there's lots of shenanigans going on between the Daleks and the Cybermen, who sort of basically sort of flexing their muscles, or, well, if they've got muscles, I suppose the Cybermen would have. The Doctor just watches them with his 3D glasses while all this is going on. I think this is a point where the other Torchwood people, Jake and that turn up, don't they? Just after, because Jackie and still can't remember her name, they get carted off to the polythene area.
Oh yes.
And she does it for Queen and Country and gets sort of converted. She does it very bravely. And she sort of takes it like a woman and, you know, walks on to her doom in a very dignified way. And Jackie's...
like a girl.
Yeah, Jackie's about to be next. But the Cybermen are distracted, I think. Was it because of a mention of the Doctor? Or something happens. They get distracted, and then Jack is able to sort of sneak out. They did do an exploding, because this is where Jake turns up and shoots one of the Cybermen, and whose head explodes, and you see all the like the white gunk coming out, which is reminiscent of the Five Doctors. You know, when the head came off the Cybermen and the Five Doctors, and all this white gunk came out. I expect that was probably put in for that. So Jackie legs it down a massive staircase, which I suppose it would be in Torchwood Towers, otherwise known as the Gherkin. And the Doctor is then taken to the parallel universe via a suspicious-looking red button. What's that noise? Oh, Johnny Candon has just gone offline. Johnny came on the show a few weeks ago. He's an Irish comedian. Back to this episode. Rose informs Mickey about her history with the Daleks. Quite like the effect of the vortex they use when they're doing the flashback sequences. I don't remember them doing that before or since. You're remembering all this, of course.
I am. Hold on, I've just got to go and help the lady wife bring the shopping in.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's fine.
Just pause.
Pause, right, yes. I'm pausing.
Okay, unpause.
Right, I'm unpausing. Right, so yes, the Doctor's with Pete in the alternative universe and gets a bit of a tour. Again, a nice shot outside the window with the airships that the alternative Earth had, or alternative London, I should say, had in the sky.
Yes, another lovely bit of CGI.
The Zeppelins. Then he's back quickly in our universe, and every time they travel backwards and forwards through the void, it destroys the world a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
And the Doctor appears around the corner waving a white flag made of an A4 sheet of paper attached to an aerial. Surprisingly, the Cyberman accepts that as a reason not to shoot him. Then the Daleks have a conversation with Rose, I think, that in which they say what their names are, or was that later on? I can't remember now. The Doctor turns up, and of course the Daleks are a little bit shifty when they realise it's the Doctor. Mickey actually looks quite impressed with the Doctor on this occasion. Normally he's a bit sort of put out by his appearance, but he seems to be quite pleased about his appearance on this particular occasion. The sonic screwdriver comes out and the doors bust open, and some of the Daleks get shot by Jake and his little band of criminals, and the Doctor and Rose sort of get away. Mickey stumbles away, but he has to touch the Genesis Arc, which the Daleks
activates.
The Daleks have been, was it the Daleks were looking after, or the Cybermen? I think it was the Daleks actually, and so he activates it rather like Rose did with the initial Dalek in the Dalek story. He touches it, and because he's a time traveller, that for some reason brilliantly activates the Genesis Arc. And meanwhile, Jackie meets up with Pete and Rose, and they have a discussion as you're not my husband, you're dead, and you're not my Jackie, she's dead. But there's a lovely scene at the end of that conversation in which they just sort of hug each other, which was really nice.
Yes, it was very touching.
And a believable thing that would happen if you happened to meet somebody who looked exactly like your dead relative or dead ex-husband or wife or whatever, you'd, for comfort's sake, you probably want to hug them. So, good thinking, Mr. T. Davis.
What? Not for the first time.
So, loads of Cybermen wandering around the streets of Great Britain in unison, rather like synchronised swimmers. The war begins, there's lots of battles going on, the Genesis Arc flies up in the sky. The Doctor still quite hasn't worked out, he knows it's Time Lord technology, but he still hasn't quite worked out what it is until it flies up into the sky, opens up, and a few million or billion Cybermen, Daleks, fly out of it. The Cybermen start shooting at them, and the Daleks basically say, exterminate every living thing on the planet. And then Pete takes everybody back to the after the Doctor explains about the wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff, he takes everybody back to the alternative universe, including Rose, who's not particularly pleased on going, but it's actually the Doctor that puts the transportation thing around Rose's neck.
Yeah, without, so you must go
without her noticing, because he knows she wouldn't leave him. But it all backfires. Because gets me right. This is the only thing, the flaw in this particular bit of plot. They've travelled back because he put the thing around Rose's neck. That meant that they all travelled back once one of them pressed the disc. So they all travelled back. So they're back there, and meanwhile Rose then says, "Oh no, you don't." While they're all still got the disc around the neck, presses it, and only she goes back.
Maybe one of them was a master control for all.
Well, explain, that would work. But I don't know, maybe that would work. Nevertheless, it did happen, and I'll settle for that explanation. Of course, the I still can't remember her name, Cyberman then comes out for Queen and Country and shoots a load of Cybermen, which I thought was a nice little bit of the story.
Nice touch,
that's the phrase I was looking for. The Doctor has acquired some very large magnetic type things to attach them to the wall with a view to opening up the void, sucking in all the Cybermen and Daleks, meanwhile while Rose and him hang on for dear life. But unfortunately one of the switches starts disengaging on Rose's side, conveniently for the plot, and she very bravely jumps across and pushes the switch back into place, then can't hang on any longer. And just
that
about
was the, so yeah, sad.
It was at the time a tear was in Deb's eye. And brilliant scene.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Basically, Pete appears, doesn't for some reason get sucked into the void.
Oh, yeah. And he's standing there as everyone's
Yeah, for some reason he doesn't get attracted to the void like everything else that's been through the void. And he's able to stand there, catch Rose, and again, convenient for the plot, but it did work beautifully for this that particular scene. And we have that scene of them, both the Doctor and Rose, up against the wall, listening for each other and looking down.
And the music.
The music was beautiful.
Absolutely
amazing scene.
Rose's theme, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think if you, I mean, obviously I was watching this for the sake of doing this podcast, but if I'd actually been sat down and watched an episode just for the sake of enjoying it, I'd probably have a tear in my eye, because I seem to remember having a bit of a lump in my throat when I watched this.
Oh yeah, definitely first time when, you know, when it was first on telly and Rose was leading and it was all
It was a big build up to this and it was amazing. So anyway, so we cut to Rose having dreams about the Doctor and with her little family.
I dreamed of him. She sounded so common in that bit, though, didn't she?
Which now includes Mickey. She did indeed. And so they decide to go off to Norway. For some reason, she's been, in her mind, she's been telepathically drawn to Norway.
Well, that's where the crack was, wasn't it? And therefore, yeah, that's how the Doctor was communicating with her, and that's why they needed to go to Dalagulf's land. And,
Well remembered. I'm impressed. So the Doctor
doesn't mean Beowulf Bay, as I said a couple of
times. No. So he's using a collapsed or a supernova energy to actually beam himself or an image of himself onto this beach, so he can have a chat with her and get to the bit where she says, "I love you," and he says, "Well, I suppose I'd better say then, Rose Tyler," and then disappears.
And then he falls out forever.
Yeah. Lots of tears and stuff. Find out that Jackie Tyler's pregnant. Can't remember them following that up too much, actually, because I know Jackie in future episodes does reappear. We'll come to that in a later episode. But she's pregnant. She hasn't actually had the baby, is she, at this point? I think she's just pregnant.
No.
I think there is mention of the baby later on, because I think the Doctor asked what the baby was called and expected it to be called Doctor, maybe. I don't know.
Let's call their baby Doctor.
Well, the Doctor's mum and dad. I'm only joking.
You got a point.
So the Doctor sort of wanders around the TARDIS sadly, flicks a few switches, and then Catherine Tate appears in the...
And they both go, what?
Wash. Now, obviously at the time, the appearance of Catherine Tate, obviously people knew it was going to be for the Christmas episode, but thinking, that's just a one-off, that's all right, we can put up with a comedy actress for one episode. But of course later on, when it was discovered she was actually going to be a regular,
and that was the best decision they made.
Absolutely. By the way, the character name of Tracy Ann Oberman's character was Yvonne Hartman.
Oh, that was it, Miss Hartman. Yes.
Got there in the end, so that'll stop people from writing in. So yes, what you can say about this particular episode, it's up there for best finale storyline. I mean, I do love Parting of the Ways as a one-off final episode of a series, but as a two-parter, it's funny that I know there's some people who really hate this, but I can't find anything about it apart from the little things I have illustrated, you know, with the slight plot holes. And they're very slight, hasten to point out. I can't find anything that's not completely and utterly enjoyable start to finish with this particular story.
It is a beautiful... Hold on a minute, I've got to be cyber, Ben. Yeah, it's alright. No, it's... it's just a brilliant few episodes, really. I mean, the whole plot is brilliantly written. Story being worked out, obviously, a long time before by RTD, and he wrote it fantastically. And yep. It was, you know... The bit at the end when they're standing on the beach, and you know, you can just imagine, you can just think of it now. I can't even remember Rose's saying.
Well, if you don't like sentimental claptrap, then you will hate it. But it was so brilliant. It was sentimental, but it was totally acceptable for this particular.
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, the way the story was written, Alright, I mean, obviously, yeah, you know, yourself and some other people might have a few things about, oh, she didn't really die.
Well, no, true.
No, but she was never going to die, it's Rose.
Yeah.
You know, she's been the assistant for two series, they're not going to just suddenly just kill her off and expect everyone to just accept it, I don't think.
Well, it was interesting, obviously, if they had killed her off, it would have been upsetting. Just as well as much as the way this was upsetting, but of course, at least there was this, oh, she's not dead, maybe they could bring her back somehow. Of course they did, but it was just such a wonderful, wonderful episode. Not sure whether it won awards or not, but
yeah, probably, if it didn't.
Yeah. Of course, it did make me think of something actually. Because what I was saying, that how it was appropriate, because obviously the Doctor started battle scarred, his time with Rose sort of healed him, and that's why he had such a strong bond with her. And I'm one of the old school who doesn't like the Doctor having too much of a romantic attachment. I can understand him having a friendship attachment, being, you know, really sad and crying because he's never going to see his friend again, or at least he thinks he's never going to see his friend again. So I can accept it on that sort of side of things. And I know Russell T. Davis was trying to put in a romantic attachment between them. Obviously, I can accept that Rose would be in love with the Doctor because she's human, but I can't accept the Doctor being in love with Rose, really. I just feel it's
undoctor-like,
and the fact that he doesn't mention the Doctor does not say he was in love with her, and never does. I can live with that. I think they've done that correctly, because the women that, you know, that like that romantic connection, mainly American women, can believe what they like, and that's fine. You know, if they want to believe the Doctor was in love with Rose, I can live with that. It's not mentioned. It's just how you want to interpret that particular thing.
And peace.
They've done it correctly in that particular.
Yeah, I think so.
That particular way. So yes, that was the end of series 2.
And we said goodbye to Rose.
Yeah, who was a vitally important character in the history of Doctor Who.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, anyone who was going to be the assistant as the series was restarted was going to have to be someone who was likeable, and people obviously did like her. I mean, she was a great character, which is why she kept on coming back, and
I was sad to see her go.
All down to the brilliance of Billy Piper, who made... I must admit, I mean, she wasn't perfect as a character. She was quite selfish in some ways. And sometimes a bit cheesy, but she did sort of balance up. They were quite similar in their, when they were getting all, like, pally, were they sort of like, oh yeah, that sort of way. They're quite similar characters in that way, but I found that a bit irritating, but they were meant to be like that, so it's fine. But on the whole, she was probably the second best companion the Doctor's ever had.
Ever classic and new.
Yep. The best one being, of course, Elizabeth Slade.
You're going to
Sarah Jane, yes.
I knew you were going to say Sarah Jane. You're so obvious sometimes.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be. It's got to be, isn't it? She was she was always my favourite companion all the way through, and still is. The second, before Rose came along, my second favourite would have been Jo Grant.
I can see why people say that. I mean, I think... Where would you place her then in the rankings of new Who assistants?
What, Rose or Jo Grant?
Yeah, no, Jo wasn't. Well, she has been. Actually.
Well, it's got to be first. Well, Rose would be, is my favourite because she's the most important. She's the one that basically cemented, or helped to cement, Doctor Who as a new commodity. That's why I like her. I'm not too keen on her future when she comes back as Rose later on, because she doesn't quite capture the way she played it when she was in the series. But I don't mind them. I just don't, you know, I'm not that keen on them. But when she was, you know, in her time, which were these two series, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, agreed.
I say Jo Grant's my third favourite because she was the earliest I can remember when watching as a child. Mm-hmm. And quite easily, without thinking about it, the fourth favourite would be Jamie. Again, that rapport that Troughton and Hines, friend of the show, Hines had.
Yeah, I was going to say our friend.
that they had was similar to the sort of rapport that Tom Baker and Elizabeth Sladen had, and that David Tennant and Rose had. But then Tennant, of course, had the similar sort of rapport with Catherine Tate.
Yeah, I mean, I love Billy Piper. I thought Chris Evans was a very lucky man for many years.
Yes, indeed.
But I don't know. I think she's fantastic, and you know, I think I don't know. I've been watching Series 4 again recently, and I just love Catherine Tate.
I love Catherine Tate too. She comes as my fifth favourite companion of all time.
I don't think I could put her that low.
Really?
For me, she'd be. She's almost joint first with her and Billy. is my favourites. My favourite ever. I mean, when I look back, I like, you know, Nyssa and.
Tegan?
Tegan was annoying.
Annoying, but she's one of my favourites. She comes just below Catherine Tate in sixth place.
I haven't ever sat down and written a list, to be honest with you.
Nor have I. I was just thinking it up off the top of my head.
But because I grew up with Davidson, and you know, he was my first. I remember some late Tom Baker one. He said Tom Jones then. I remember some late Tom Baker episodes. You know, some of his last series. But Davidson was the one who I grew up watching, and so therefore his first four assistants, or first three assistants, you know, when he had Nyssa, Tegan and Adric, they're the ones I always liked most. And then obviously, yes, went a little bit downhill after that, apparently. And I didn't, it was that one that they brought in, that Anne Ward one.
Adric?
No,
yeah. Oh, Chameleon?
Chameleon. I mean, what was that about?
If you look at all the DVD extras of those particular episodes, you can understand why they thought it might be a good idea, but it all backfired on them. I think the bloke who invented Chameleon died or something like that, and he was the only one who really knew how to operate it.
That may well be the case, but the whole concept was just ridiculous, if you ask me. But anyway, I thought, back to the episodes, one of my favourite of the Tennant era, without a doubt, those two episodes.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the way it ends, the last 10, it's just on an emotional knife edge the whole time.
I have to say, though, it is my favourite so far of the Tennant era. I'll have to obviously assess it on this particular run, because this is the first time I've watched the new Who episodes in, you know, succession. I've watched the odd ones here and there, but not as a series, since it actually was a series. So, I'll assess it later on, but this is certainly my favourite Tennant story. It's a good two-parter, because sometimes the two-parters don't quite work. You get a good second-parter and not a very good first-parter, or vice versa, but both of these episodes really work well. And I remember listening to other Doctor Who podcasts at the time, because our show wasn't on when this show went out, but I was listening to podcasts, and certain Doctor Who fans were slating it, and I couldn't see why.
No, I can't see any reason to at all.
I think it's basically there was the beginnings of the RTD haters.
God, they must love Moffat then.
They do.
Well,
I don't mind Moffat. I don't think he's as good as RTD, to be honest with you. I know people are now switching off their iPods, throwing them across the room, but listeners, watch these episodes like we are, and I think you will appreciate the RTD era for what it was. I'm not saying it was perfect. I'm not saying it was always good. But at this stage, it was.
It's a hell of a lot better than anything Moffat's come up with so far.
There was darkness. And I'm going to say, we'll come across the darkness later on.
Darkness. But, you know, at the end of the day, he brought it back. He made it what it is.
Yeah.
And
laid the foundations.
And I say, nothing that Moffat's done has come close, which is why I don't like him, everybody.
Well, I'm looking forward, because there was a mention that he wanted RTD to write some episodes. I do hope that happens. I'll be interested to see how an RTD episode would fit into a Stephen Moffat script-edited series. I don't think he'd need to script edit too much. He might have to insert a few things for the story arc, but I really am looking forward to when that happens.
I'd love that if he came back and wrote a few episodes.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? I really, really hope he does. I can't see it being a few. I imagine it'd be maybe a one or two parter. But I hope it's a two parter.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Would be great. Anyway, my time here must come to an end, my friend, because the wife has come home from the shopping.
She hasn't come down up the stairs and opened the door up and sweared a few times at you, has she?
No, mine hasn't done that. No, that's who walks.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
So I better say au revoir.
Okay. It was nice to have you back, Ben.
Well, it was nice to be back. Thank and I you. Shall make a guest appearance sometime in the future. Just like Brian Blessed. I'll pop up as expected. Make a lot of noise.
Certainly let me know when you're available on Monday, because I'm not going to be available this Monday again because of the Queen's Jubilee. So I'm going to have to record the podcast on another day again. Hopefully with Kirby this time.
Well, I am actually off on Monday, but me and the wife...
Are you? Oh, of course.
We're going out.
Isn't that typical? Listeners, there was one of the feedback they did allude to Robert, who is out of hospital and is back on Facebook. So if Robert's on Facebook, that's always good news.
Yes, it is. Old grammar.
Anyway, thanks, Ben, and hopefully see you again soon.
Thanks, Adam. Bye, podcast people.
Bye-bye. Meanwhile, I'm going to carry on, but...
you crack on, sir.
Thanks, mate.
No worries. Good fun. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Cheers.
All right. Bye.
All right, then. I just have a little bit of news to impart. Let's see. I did have a page open here. Let's see if I can find it. The TV Choice Awards. Voting is now open for the 16th annual TV Choice Awards, with Doctor Who nominated in the same three categories it won last year. The series itself has been nominated for Best Family Drama, which it won both last year in 2010. This year again sees it line up against spin-off series Sarah Jane Adventures, as well as Waterloo Road, Merlin, Casualty, Holby City, Glee, Doc Martin and Wild at Heart. Matt Smith is up for a second award for Best Actor, a huge category of names that also include Sherlock's Benedict Cumberbatch. I'll say that name one day. And Martin Freeman, who I'd like to see as the Doctor. Karen Gillan is up for her second Best Actress award, and again sees her pitted against former companion Freema Agyeman for Law and Order. Law and Order UK. And other nominees include Gillian Anderson for Great Expectations and Amelia Fox from one of my favourite series, Silent Witness. Oh, of course, and Miranda Hart for Call the Midwife, which is mind-blowingly brilliant, that series. So, American listeners, I hope they buy Call the Midwife so you lot can see it. Superb. Additionally, Torchwood Miracle Day has been nominated for the Best Drama Series category, and it's up against Sherlock. What else we got here? As well as the three awards won last year, previous ceremonies have seen Doctor Who win every year except 2009, where it was beaten by Waterloo Road. Ouch. Right, script to screen, as me and Ben spoke about earlier on, that was a Blue Peter competition where some school kids wrote a Doctor Who script and they brought it to the screen, and that was shown on the BBC or CBBC's Blue Peter episode that week. Is available online. Should be too difficult for you to find that one. Ambassadors of Death has been passed. The special features have been for the forthcoming DVD. And I don't know if it's it just says DVD is yet to be formally scheduled, though it's believed to be due in autumn this year. So let's hope so, because I've got a video of that one which I can't play really, because it means digging out the old VHS player and worrying about whether the tape gets chewed up or not. Vengeance on Varos, a special edition, has also got some bonus features that have been approved, so there's more money has to be shelled out if you want to see some bonus features for Vengeance on Varys. Jenna Louise Comen has begun her new as a new co-star of Doctor Who, and she was spotted the other day at the end of her filming of first scenes on location of at Plaschlan, some place in Wales that I can't pronounce. What does it say? Read through for her first episode to be recorded took place on Monday with the BBC's official Doctor Who Twitter feed stating, "History has been made, a new era begins. Jenna Louise Comen has just completed her first Doctor Who read through. One word, brilliant." So life goes on for Doctor Who without Karen Gillan. And what else we got? Matt Smith has borne the Olympic torch. I wonder if he'll sell his one on eBay. I'd just like to point out that Isabella and I have actually held an Olympic torch at the Isle of Wight Festival last year. A picture of that is available on my Facebook site. The BBC have released a video to introduce the new Roth Lock Studios at Cardiff Bay, which is apparently where Doctor Who has now got a new home. That's really about it. No charts again this week because basically they take too long to put together and I'm very, very busy at the moment, so it's either we don't have a podcast and I compile the charts or the other way around. I'm hoping to bring them back at some time in the future, but just very, very busy at the moment. Sorry about that, listeners. It was when you're busy in your home life, it does rather make it difficult to produce a podcast, but I've done it this week and I hope you enjoyed it, and we will be back next week, some when, don't know when, but we will be. And until then, thank you for listening. Bye.
Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.
Fear Her, written by Matthew Graham. My notes go as follows. Happy estate with a missing child poster on lamppost. Old lady seems to notice something strange.
Who used to be in EastEnders.
Yeah, she didn't look any different, does she? Must have been a few years later.
No, she didn't.
Are you okay? Do you want to call me to call a doctor? I thought that was a bit cheesy.
Tedious.
Yeah, I'm not.
Tenuous.
Doctor
tenuous.
Won't hope. Doctor won't help. Get them in, it's not safe. So, and then there's this black girl singing annoying songs. and drawing the picture of a boy who is playing outside. As soon as the drawing is finished, the real boy vanishes and the drawing comes to life. And then it's the sting and the eye. And I was quite clever the way they animated it, that was quite good. The TARDIS materialises between two blue containers, but with the door facing the wrong way. I quite like that bit. I thought that was quite clever. And about time that was done. And the Doctor's reaction as he sort of goes in and goes, oh!
Oh.
The Doctor has brought Rose to see the 2012 Olympics. Wrong logo, I noticed. It's quite funny.
I don't think the logo had actually been officially released at the time.
Which is a shame. That was their like campaign logo, wasn't it? I think they used for that.
I think it was just the Olympic rings, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. And then Rose notices the missing posters. The Doctor soon runs off to investigate, and he feels coldness in certain areas.
Yeah.
The car stalls.
Using magic hand.
Yeah. It says car stalls.
Yeah. Now, there's a bit, isn't there, where the workman is filling in the potholes, and then a car drives past, a little red Mini, and it just cuts out. And he comes over and says, yeah, that's been happening a lot recently.
Yeah. And that was quite interesting, that. And quite well done, because they pushed it, and suddenly it started back up again.
Yeah.
And it says, Rose and this black chap push the car to Dame Kelly Holmes Close.
Well, the whole thing's Dame Kelly Holmes Close, isn't it?
I wonder what Dame Helly Holmes... Helly Holmes? Dame Kelly Holmes thought of that. And, of course, it's spontaneous, as I say. Spontaneously starts and goes off. Old woman tells Rose that it takes the children while they're playing, and Doctor arrives and tries to stop the residents blaming the tarmac men. So I thought it was quite funny, this sort of argument with the tarmac men who didn't look particularly guilty. I quite like the character of, was it Kel, the tarmac man?
Yeah.
He was quite a good character.
Rose
notices a little black girl watching from the window. The Doctor sniffs the air like the Master did in End of Time. So obviously the Time Lords have got some special sense of smell.
Either that or he was just being Joey out of Friends, smelling the next line.
Or maybe someone just let one go.
Maybe.
Rose can smell metal. Is that some? I don't quite know what that means. Isn't that you got burning electrics?
I don't remember. Well, Rose can smell metal.
I'm pretty sure she said she can smell metal. The Doctor is wearing a collarless shirt, which is undone. And that's the first time I noticed that particular thing. The fact that he normally wears a shirt tie, and this was like a no collar, open almost down to the sort of halfway down his chest.
I didn't actually realise that. I didn't check what they were both. Actually, I was checking what Rose was wearing as she was running. But
it just sort of stood out to me. I'd never noticed him not wearing a tie before.
Well pointed out.
Thank you very much. Proves I was watching, I suppose. Anyway, the little girl is drawing... The little girl is drawing still. That means I think she's still drawing. I thought that the still ran the wrong way there. Her mum tries to get her to watch the TV on the computer. And it's the only channel that seems to be on the computer is BBC News 24. The little girl is called Chloe.
Chloe Webber.
Chloe Webber, yes. She threatens to draw her mum. Yeah, it was a shut up, mum, or I'll draw you.
Yeah, my Chloe's like that.
and she leaves the mother. Aren't you a beautiful boy? Asks Rose. I'm experimenting with black backcombing, says the Doctor. But in fact, Rose is talking to a ginger cat. The Doctor says he is not a cat person after being threatened by one in a nun's wimple. I thought that was quite a funny line.
Yeah.
And then the cat vanishes, and the Doctor is impressed. Keep him peeled, Lewis, he says to Rose. I thought that was an interesting line as well.
Yeah.
Chloe is talking to her drawings. She draws a scribble angrily, and instead of when she draws something normally the items disappear, in this case she drew it and appeared, which was a bit weird, and it was the scribble, which is hiding behind a garage door, and Rose can hear this banging, and she goes up to the garage door and opens it up, and it attacks her. So she was nearly scribbled to death, and then the Doctor kills it with a sonic screwdriver. And they go to the TARDIS and examine it, and it's graphite.
Mm.
Yes. Rose helps the Doctor realise that the little girl on the street is responsible for all these funny things going on, and they arrive at Chloe's house. and they want to speak to her. At this point, I drifted off a little, because I put it in brackets. I don't know, I started thinking about other things. You know, when you're watching something, you know, you're watching it, and you're tuned into it, you don't normally do that. For that moment, I drifted off and had to go and rewind it back to the bit where I left it, because I drifted off. So, yeah. Rose pokes around in Chloe's room while the doctor tries to chat with Chloe Webber. The doctor makes a Vulcan hand. I thought that was another little nod to Star Trek. Do you remember that bit where he sort of split his fingers in the middle to make
Spock's salute? Spock signed him. Can you do this?
Yeah. Chloe tells the doctor that they keep moaning, her drawings, that is. And Rose discovers some sort of monster in Chloe's cupboard. She calls out for the doctor. He arrives and shuts the cupboard door. Chloe dreams about her evil dad. Rose tells Chloe's mum that her daughter has a power, and the doctor mentions to her mum that she has seen something out of the corner of her eye, but dismisses it. Now, they've used this out of the corner of the eye thing quite a lot, haven't they? I'm going to wind my whimper.
They did, yeah. It was quite a good little...
But they've used it more recently in Doctor Who, haven't they? You know, with the Doctor, like in Family of Blood, where you can see out the corner of the eye in the mirror that one of the Family of Blood children, and as soon as I wind the window down, God's sake. Yeah, what was the first Matt Smith story? 11th Hour. You can see out the corner of your eye the extra room sort of thing. You know, they seem to use that quite a lot in Doctor Who. Where do I get up to? Yeah, Rose stops the doctor from eating marmalade from a jar with his fingers, with a dirty look.
Yeah.
I like that
scene. It's a
little bit. But that's quite good, isn't it? Because a lot of people say that Tennant's doctor was very human, but that was very doctor and very alien, I thought, and very, you know, the sort of thing Matt Smith's doctor would have done. So I quite like that scene. It's a shame it's got not much to do with the story. The doctor sends Chloe into a trance, rather like Spock. Did you think that was quite sort of Spock sending people?
Spock-esque.
Spock, yeah. Spock-esque. This is obviously this writer's big fan of Star Trek, which isn't a problem. But there you go. Chloe collapses.
Did you?
No. Chloe collapses on the bed, and the alien talks through her mouth. I want Chloe. That was quite creepy the way she did that, actually.
It was really, you know, Saturday night, 5:30, being 11 years old, hiding behind the sofa when some freaky voice started coming out of someone moments ago, wasn't it? It was really, really well done, I think.
It was. The doctor says, I express parley in compliance with the Shadow Proclamation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, was that the first time the Shadow Proclamation gets a mention in Doctor Who?
It was, actually, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah, wasn't in Series 1. They didn't
mention it. Or did... I think it was, actually, because the second time it gets mentioned is with the Jadoon, isn't it?
Yeah.
He eventually gets the entity that has taken over Chloe to name for himself, and it is Isolus. Or Isolus, I should say. Chloe is drawing automatically while she's in a trance, which is quite creepy as well and quite well done.
Yeah.
Well, busy along this road. You wouldn't believe this was just a little road leading down to the beach.
I wouldn't believe you'd got cars on the Isle of Wight. I mean,
the Isolus, the Isolus remain children for thousands of years. God,
and their parents must be
in a complete state, permanent state of migraine, I think. Yes, the Isolus pod crashes to Earth, leaving the rest of the fleet in space, and certain pedestrians are wandering past the car and getting on my podcast.
I was just going to say, we've got a special guest of mother and child walking past, so congratulations on becoming the fourth and fifth members of today's podcast crew. Don't get them back, they might have an opinion.
They will do. So the fleet is in space, yes. A monster in the wardrobe begins to shout out sinister things, but Mum calms Chloe down by singing to her, and the monster goes away. I wish those blimmin' cars would go away.
They are, they're driving past, and then go and carry on going.
Yeah.
They're not
stopping. I didn't think of that one. Yeah, so... yeah, that song I find really irritating. I don't know. That's just been me.
Good old kiddie song, isn't it? That you know, is easily rememberable and easily knowing what it is, and you know,
maybe
it's a special song that they sing between themselves. It was nice, I think. I like that.
You liked it, did you?
I liked it. Didn't like the song, but I liked the
idea of it.
Yeah, the idea of it, the way it put in, I think it worked very well. And, you know, I'm going to hurt you, Chloe. He kept on saying.
Oh, it's Ray Winston in the wardrobe.
I'm going to hurt you. Yeah.
Yeah. They hide all of Chloe's drawing equipment. And Isolus and Chloe are two lonely kids drawn to each other. Chloe is watching the build-up of the opening ceremony of the Olympics, and the Doctor and Rose look out for the Isolus ship from within the TARDIS, and Chloe has followed them. Chloe, back in her room, obviously the TARDIS was parked quite close to this area, and I think it was anyway, so we'll let them off that one. Chloe's back in her room, and she has some pencils hidden within a doll's sort of body underneath her bed.
Which is kind of weird, because, you know, sometimes kids will hide chocolate or sweets. Yes. Not too many kids, I know, hide pencils, just in case.
Indeed. The Doctor tries to make Rose understand that the Isolus is just a kid, and Rose says that the Doctor wouldn't understand if he doesn't have kids. I was a dad once, says the Doctor. And I think that, again, is the first reference to the Doctor being a parent in the new series.
Yeah.
The TARDIS,
the Doctor's daughter.
Yeah, the TARDIS has found the pod in the street, the computer, and so I think they head out of the TARDIS to try and get it, and then the Doctor is drawn by Chloe and vanishes.
Yeah.
And then Rose runs in to have a go at Chloe and tells Chloe to bring the Doctor back now, and the Isolus within Chloe insists that it wants to stay with Chloe as it loves Chloe. And then Rose gets a bit cross. The pod travels on heat. Kel, the black tarmacker, has laid some fresh hot tarmac outside. 6 days previous, he laid some fresh tarmac to fix a pothole. Rose nicks some council equipment from Kel's van. He ran.
I love that bit.
Hey,
that
was a really that's a council bit. Van. Ouch.
That's a council pickaxe.
You've just removed a council axe from the council van, and now you're digging up the council road. I'm reporting you to the council. And Rose digs up the pod. What is it? It's a spaceship, not a council spaceship, I'm afraid. I thought that was quite good.
Good line.
Chloe is left alone, despite her mother being told not to leave her. On the TV, the crowd in the Olympic Stadium has vanished, but it's not enough for the Isolus. Chloe is locked in the room and starts drawing on the wall, and Rose attacks the door with an axe. The monster in the wardrobe is trying to get out. Kel notices that the pictures are moving, like Harry Potter, I suppose. Rose finds the Doctor's drawing. He is pointing to a torch, the Olympic torch. She didn't draw that. He did, Rose mutters. Chloe is drawing the picture of planet Earth on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly.
She wants all the friends. It's all of them as friends.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, but if the Earth had been drawn and then the Earth disappeared, that doesn't leave them very far to go, does it, really, with this story?
No, that's right. Also, I think if she's going to draw the whole of Earth, that wouldn't just be the humans, would it? It'd be everything, every living thing.
Yeah, and the other thing is, because of the way she was drawing it, it was only a 2D picture, so does that mean the side of the Earth that she didn't draw would have still been there?
That is a good point. On the other side of the Earth, they'd be all completely populated, wouldn't it?
Oh, well, I mean,
I hadn't thought of that point.
Once the people disappeared.
That's another good point. I hadn't thought of those ones.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's what I'm here for.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. Anyway, we continue.
Yes. Rose enters the crowd watching the torchbearer. She lobs the pod into the air and it lands in the flame. Brilliant shot. But then again, it might have actually flown into the flame because it's a spaceship, isn't it?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that's what it looked like. It looked like she kind of like threw it in the right direction, and it kind of like used its own like impetus to go, ah, there's a flame, need to get warm, let's go in there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it did. I think it kind of like flew into the base of it, or the top of the flame, actually.
Yeah. And the Isolus leaves Chloe, and some cheesiness ensues. I thought that Isolus thing coming out of her mouth was quite good.
Yes.
All the kids return from midair. The old woman thanks Rose, but the Doctor is not there, and the monster is coming out of the wardrobe still. And it's coming to hurt Chloe, or should I say Ray Winston is coming out of the wardrobe too, because it sounds like Ray Winston. They sing the annoying song again, and it kills the monster. I'm not really surprised, because it nearly killed me. The torchbearer collapses. The doctor takes over, carrying the flame. It's hope, what? It's courage, it's love, vomit-worthy yeah, comments of the commentator.
God. You Edwards. Yeah, you no, Edwards. See, the thing is, although that was all very, you know, touching and sentimental and, oh, lovely, the doctor's going to light the Olympic flame and all that kind of rubbish, I haven't worked out why the person carrying the torch fell over.
That's a good point. Maybe he's allergic to the smell of fresh tarmac or something.
Yeah, maybe he's allergic to aliens.
Yeah, possibly.
Alien pods being... But I couldn't or maybe,
the,
sonic,
that maybe the doctor sort of sonicked him from... knocked him out, so as he could do it.
Yeah, know. Maybe he wanted all the glory himself. We don't know who he is, but he's running through the streets with the torch. Bearing, but, you know, cheesy, but liked it.
It was. Well, you liked it, I didn't. Bearing in mind this is August, you can see their breath. I think that's... shows what was going through my mind. And the coach goes rolling past. Thank you very much.
The reason you could see their breath and everything like that was because it was filmed in January 2006, I think.
Yeah, but they should have digitally removed it because, bearing in mind, like I say, the Olympics is in July, August. You wouldn't see people's breath in the evening, would you? Unless they'd just taken a hot sip of tea. That's what they should have done.
The
director would have seen the fact you can see their breath, and they said, well, we can get around that, give them a hot cup of tea to carry along, then that'll explain partly why you can see.
They should have just filmed it in August. They should have waited to 2012 and filmed it then.
Yes. Oh, yeah, would have been good. And it says, we will always be together, you and me. A storm is approaching. And that was the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
So that concludes. I'm just winding the window up because I'm getting fed up with these cars going past. That concludes my notes on Fear Her. Now, I'll say I can tolerate this story because there's some quite funny and good bits of dialogue in it, but on the whole, not overly keen on it.
It's one of those standalone episodes, isn't it? Which... Mm. You can either kind of like a lot of people can either take or leave. It's not. I wouldn't ever write it down as one of my favourite ever episodes. I can quite easily tolerate it. I can easily tolerate every. You know,
no, you tolerate me.
Well, exactly. So I would Fear Her. And I think, you know, it's not one of my favourite, but certainly good enough to be, you know, a good Doctor Who story. And you know, I thought the idea of drawing the people who then disappeared. Well, I like that.
It was
that
original,
idea.
I suppose. I'll give it that. It did have an original concept. It was just there was too much cheesiness in it. That it was the cheesy things that stand out for me. Even though having watched the story, there are some really good bits in it as well. It's just that they're overshadowed for me by the cheesy and the naff bits.
There are some really good bits. There are some really good lines in it. You know, the bit where the Doctor and Rose have just arrived and they're walking. Into Dame Kelly Holmes' clothes for the first time, and Rose sees the pictures attached to the lamppost. The conversation they're having there, the doctor's going on about, I can't remember what he's going on about. It did make me laugh as I was watching though, because he just carries on talking about. there's some good lines. The bit with the TARDIS materialising the wrong way, I say that, as you said earlier, that should have happened a long time ago, and it was funny and it was very well done. But yeah, it was. I'd rate it 7.5 TARDISes out of 14.
Okay. So there we go. That's Fear Her, ladies and gentlemen, and children, and listeners, etc.